this week, February 4th, 2014, on The Digital Story. How high is too high? From the screening room, Nigel French, designing a photo book. And on the Nimbelocity Report, the Oloclip auxiliary lens for your iPhone. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I have three tantalizing topics for you today. We're going to start out by visiting ISO settings, or revisiting them, because as technology changes, we have to make sure that we're keeping up and making the adjustments that work in our favor and not clinging to old habits just because that's what we're used to. And then in the second segment, we're going to stop in and visit Nigel French in the screening room. And Nigel is an expert at designing photo books, and he shares his information with us. There's probably very few things that are as satisfying as designing our own photo book. And in the third segment, we're going to get super nimble. We're going to strike out into the world with just our iPhone and a few auxiliary lenses in our pocket. How fun is that? So let's get started. Let's start with the high ISO topic. ISO has changed over the years. For the longest time, ISO 400 was about the highest that most of us felt comfortable with in digital photography. You went beyond 400, noise became too chunky, in all honesty. The colors got a little weird. And the image just didn't look good. And, you know, it's funny, especially with earlier sensors, going over the comfortable ISO setting wasn't the same as shooting high ISO with film. When we shot something radical like ISO 1600 film, yeah, you saw the grain, but the grain was cool. You know what I mean? I mean, it looked neat. I mean, you wouldn't use it for you know, Aunt Jane's birthday party, but for fine art stuff and for street shooting, it was pretty neat. Well, the noise, especially from the earlier sensors at high ISO, was not as cool as the film grain was. It instead of looking artistic, it just looked messy. The colors would be off, and the shadows would get really funky, and wasn't a pretty sight at all. But fortunately, sensor technology has continued to evolve in a lot of different directions. Of course, we have more resolution now than we had then. But we also can shoot at higher ISO settings and still have a good quality image. So in a relatively short period of time, we went from ISO 400 to 800. 800 was just a cup of coffee, wasn't it? Because before you knew it, you were at ISO 1600, snapping away without a care in the world. But I think ISO 1600 is where a lot of people have stopped. But sensor technology has continued. And, you know, I fell victim of this myself. I was stuck on ISO 1600 for the longest time. Even with my relatively new Canon 70D, even with the Olympus OMD EM5 and the EM1, I just did not want to go beyond 1600 because I was concerned that the image quality would be disappointing and that I would take this wonderful shot only to go, oh God, I wish I had shot it at, you know, a lower ISO setting. It's funny how these things work out. Those of you that follow the site and follow me on Facebook and all that know that I've been shooting a lot of indoor basketball this season in high school gyms. Now, high school gyms are not like professional NBA arenas on so many levels. But from a photographer's point of view, mainly in the amount of light that's available inside these gyms, and then also the quality of the light. You're battling on two fronts there. Now, in terms of the funky color and so forth, some of that can be corrected later on in post-production. But the amount of light is a whole nother matter, and that is not something that's easy to address after the shot has been taken. You have to address low light when you're capturing the image. It's not the same as color being a bit off. And some of these gems are just downright dark. You know, I have good prime lenses. I have lenses that the maximum aperture is f1.8 and even have a f1.4 lens. But even when I was opening these lenses all the way up, let's say on my OMD, I still was getting shutter speeds that were too slow at ISO 1600. You know, and when you're shooting action, You can't shoot a basketball game at 1/125th of a second. It just doesn't work. If you're taking portraits in between the action, yes, you can do that. Or if you're just really lucky and get something right at the peak of action, let's say a jump ball, that can work. But generally speaking, you need to be at least 1/250th of a second and preferably higher. You know, 1/500th of a second if you can get it indoors. And I just couldn't get the math to work at ISO 1600, even with these fast lenses, in some of these dark gyms. So I was really faced with a decision. And at first, I fought it, right? I said, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and, you know, shoot at ISO 1600 and I'll get what I get. And then I'd be looking at the shots like at halftime and I was going, I'm not getting what I'm wanting to get here at all. There's way too much movement. So I said, all right, I'm just going to have to shoot at 3200 and see what I think afterwards. And so I was shooting raw files, I think, which probably helped a little bit. Then I would pick up the shoot at 3200. Well, the interesting thing is, as I was looking at the images in post, in aperture, when I moved from 1600, ISO 1600, to ISO 3200, I really didn't notice a quality difference between the shots, other than I was able to finally freeze movement at ISO 3200, where I hadn't been able to do so consistently at ISO 1600. And I was going, you know, isn't that funny that, you know, even me, the guy that takes a fair amount of pride in keeping up and moving along as technology moves, was sort of bitten by this self-imposed limitation of ISO 1600 when the camera that I was shooting with for this type of shot anyway, action sports shot, was doing just fine at ISO 3200. Absolutely fine. The images look terrific. If I were to notice anything at ISO 3200 is different, is that a little less saturation in the colors. You know, the colors weren't as vibrant. Here's the funny thing about that. Since the color in these gyms is so terrible anyway, that really wasn't a bad thing. You know, it was sort of like, okay, I'm getting less of a terrible color here. I can live with that. And that's really, you know, the way that I ended up feeling about this. Now, I think in part the reason why this topic is coming up in this week's podcast is because I just published high ISO photo assignment that just went up this last weekend. And if you haven't seen that gallery yet, it's terrific. The digital story community really delivers some interesting shots. And as I was looking at these photos, I was noticing, you know what? A lot of these shots are at ISO 1600, you know, for high ISO, which totally qualified. There was, you know, absolutely nothing wrong with that. But it did get me thinking that, you know what, there's a lot of us that are sort of unwilling to go beyond the 1600 for fear of subpar quality. And I think, you know, totally, obviously, it depends on the camera that you have. If you've got an older Nikon or an older Canon or something, yeah, probably 1600 is where you have to stay. However, if you have a newer camera, if you have, You know, the latest from Olympus, from Panasonic, from Nikon, from Canon, from Sony, from Pentax. Who am I not thinking of? Samsung. Then, you know what? You probably can move that up a notch. And so then, as I looked at those shots, and I was thinking, okay, we just need to just revisit this for a moment. And so the takeaway on this segment is that if you have one of these cameras that's a bit newer and you have found yourself unwilling to go beyond ISO 1600, maybe what I'd ask you to do is this. Create a self-assignment for yourself where you go shoot at 3200. And if you want, you can even do a test. You can shoot some of it at 1600, some of it at 3200. And then why not check it out at 6400 while you're at it. Do an assignment, a self-assignment, where you at least go to 3200, maybe 6400. Shoot it in RAW, shoot it in JPEG, load the shots into your favorite photo management software, and then take a look at it and see what you think. Take a look at it and see what you think. My feeling is that you will probably, after you do this in a somewhat methodical way, you will probably be more comfortable with ISO 3200, and maybe even beyond that. And, you know, what are the benefits of being that doesn't mean you have to shoot with it all the time. That just means that when the situation warrants raising it to 3200, such as, you know, my thing where I was having to shoot in these dark high school gyms where ISO 3200 was absolutely the logical answer, that you do the logical thing so that you can come away with the best shot possible and not be limited by something that was based on an earlier camera and an older technology. And that's the takeaway from this. And, you know, we have to revisit our habits all of the time. Right now, I think, you know, ISO settings and the ISO ceiling is one worth taking a look at. Let me know what you think. You know, I'm going to post this podcast on the Digital Story Facebook page. After you do your test, post a comment on there and let me know how the results go for you. Make sure you include the camera so that, you know, we know what we're talking about here. Maybe we can go up a f-stop and a shutter speed setting. And I'll tell you, for me, in that high school gym, those high school gyms, that made a big difference, just having one more shutter speed setting to work with. All right. From the screening room, who are we featuring today? I've got a good one for you today. Nigel French. And I don't know if you've ever seen Nigel French speak, but he's a delight. Just as an instructor and as a person, he's fun to listen to. He's interesting. He's articulate. He's really good, it comes down to. But so, you know, that's definitely half of why he's our featured artist in this week's screening room. The other half is, though, that the topic is designing a photo book. And, you know, having a photo book or many photo books is one of those things that we can do as photographers to pull together a collection of images that essentially will live together forever, right? I mean, once you print that book and once you have that book, then you have created, you know, a narrative that can be handed down from generation to generation. No tools are needed to view those images, to read those words. All you have to do is open it up and look at it. But, you know, telling a story using a photo book, there's an art to it, just like there is to a great slideshow, just like there is to a movie. You know, any other thing where you're working with a series of images, there's an art to the presentation, to how you select the images. And then you get down to the technical things on just what makes good book design. You know, where do you put the words? How far in from the gutter do you move the images? You know, what techniques can you use for different types of shots to present them as effectively as possible? And these are the sort of things that Nigel French address in this week's screening room selection, designing a photo book. Not only does he give you the step-by-step for how to do this, regardless of what software you're using, whether you're in iPhoto, Aperture, Blurb, Shutterfly, whatever you're using, the principles of good book design work regardless of the application. And he will teach you things about putting a collection of images together that will make your book better. You know, you'll go from just, you know, creating a book, which, you know, the first time you do that, you're going to be excited no matter what, right? Because you have a book, to then creating a book that is also a good book, in addition to just something that has your work in it. And so if you're interested in this, if you like this sort of thing, and if you've been thinking, you know, I need to do this. I need to do this for a personal project, or our, you know, we have a, you know, once in a lifetime trip coming up, whatever the reason may be, I encourage you to watch this title first and then think about what he says a bit, and then start to work on your photo book. I promise you, it will improve your project. It'll be better. And so you can, I have in the screening room on our landing page, I have the overview movie by Nigel. And, you know, you can watch that right now by going to lynda.com, and that's with a Y, lynda.com/thedigitalstory. And if you go there via the link in the show notes, then that'll actually, you know, register where you came from with the folks at Lynda, which is always good. You know, they like to know, you know, he's talking about this on the podcast, but we don't know what's going on. Well, this will help them know what's going on. And of course, you know, while you're there, you can start your 7-day free trial right off the bat. That'll let you, you know, watch the rest of Nigel's movies. Plus, I'm sure you'll have time left over to explore a few other topics. And then, you know, if you decide this is something that's useful to you, you know, you can subscribe for $25 for a month and watch anything you want to watch as often as you want to watch it. So even once you get past the 7-day free trial, just know that this is about as affordable as it gets with some of the best teachers going in the world of photography, design, and illustration, all that good stuff. So anyway, Nigel French, he's our featured artist this week on the Screening Room, designing a photo book. I'm really excited about this one. At least go check out the introduction movie, see what you think, and if you like it, do that 7-day free trial and get good at this. Make something exciting. I'm just excited thinking about what you might do. But you know me, I get excited easily. All right, third story. On the Nimblosity report, there's Nimble, right? And then there's iPhone-only Nimble, and that's what we're going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about wandering out of the house with your iPhone in one pocket, and in this case, an Olaclip lens in the other. Now, I got turned on, you know, I've known about them for a while, but, you know, I really got turned on to them when I went to CES. And as you may recall, when I did the recap of the CES show, I included them in the recap because they had set up this nice display at CES showing off their new macro lens. So, you know, who are these guys? They make probably the nicest clip-on lenses for the iPhone going. High-quality optics, lens coatings, you know, machined aircraft aluminum cases. I mean, just quality all the way. And the way that they work is that they put two lenses on, you know, one of these units. And then there's a slot in between them. And you slide it onto your iPhone, and it fits perfectly over the corner. And so then, like, for instance, you might have the fisheye is one of the lenses, so you're using that, and then the other lens, let's say on the foreign one, is a wide-angle lens. So then you just turn around, and then you put the wide-angle there, and it's really neat because it's sort of like having interchangeable lenses. Well, they are interchangeable lenses, but it's like having an interchangeable lens camera, except you're just carrying an iPhone and, you know, these very little things, and they come in a, you know, with their own little pouch, you know, that's all soft and everything, a little drawstring. The foreign one has a little red drawstring with a gray pouch. It's actually quite cute. So literally, I've been testing these things because I got all excited about them at CES because they just you know really upgraded the line. You know, they had a 3-in-1 before, and then they upgraded that to the 4-in-1, which I think is probably the most fun of the bunch, or the most versatile anyway. And what that gives you is that it gives you a fisheye, it gives you a wide angle, and then you unscrew the objective lens on each of them, and it gives you two macros. And so then you have two different macro strengths. So on this one little thing that you just carry around in your pocket, that's, you know, small. I don't have, I'm not coming up with a great analogy right now, but I mean, it probably takes as much space as a compact flash card in your pocket. It's small. In that amount of space, you have four different lenses that work great. And then they've done all sorts of cool things, like they developed a telephoto lens that gives you 2x magnification. And it comes with a polarizer, and the polarizer will work on your other lenses. And then they, I wrote about the other day, the macro lenses. They got a dedicated macro lens, too, that comes with a little translucent hood so that you put it right down on the object. It lets light in, and yet it's the perfect distance so that your focus will be right on the money. So they have that. And then the thing that I think kind of solved an earlier problem that I had when I was looking at these, you know, they slide right over the iPhone, you know, these clips do. And they're very snug and they're great when they're on there and they stay on. They don't fall off. They're machined beautifully and they're soft and they don't scratch your iPhone at all. But the problem is you can't have a case on, a normal case, when you're using them. And this is always kind of a thing for me. So, you know, I'd have my case. So that means in order for me to use these auxiliary lenses, I'd have to take off my case and then I have to put on the lens. And then later on when I'm done shooting, I have to put the case back on. And it's just kind of a hassle. Well, I mean, obviously they figured out that this was a hassle too. So they came out with a flip case. And it's really cool. It's a hard plastic case. And it's nice. It's not the, you know, it's not like a $40 dedicated case, but it's a nice case. And then the corner flips. So you don't have to remove the case. When you want to use one of the lenses, you just flip the corner up and flip it around. And it actually turns into a shutter trigger for the volume plus button, which is a nice touch, a very, very clever sort of thing. So now you can just leave the case on and use these auxiliary lenses. Now, how much are they? Well, I think the 4-in-1, which is the one that I think is the most versatile, I think it's around $65 right now. I'll put a link to them in the show notes. And I think the case is around $40-something also. So you're looking at, you know, for a setup here, if you want to do the case and, you know, the first four lenses, you're looking at around $100. So, that's no small investment, right? I mean, that's real money. So I wanted to make sure that I really had a chance to test these before I talked about them because, you know, $100 is $100. But I'll tell you, I've been carrying them around now for, probably about 10 days. And they're cool. They're cool. And, you know, I played around when I had the iPhone 4S. I had a cheapy fisheye lens. And even then, I really liked it. You know, even though it wasn't as good as the Olaclip that I have now, it was still fun. Well, now I have the high-quality fisheye lens, and I'm really having a blast with it. It's been helpful to have the wide angle. And then, I've played with the macro lenses. And just to have all these that fit in your pocket. So it's super nimble, very high quality. And like I said, suddenly it's like it has some of the benefits of an interchangeable lens camera, but everything fits in a pocket. I mean, you don't even have anything on your shoulder. So I give it a very high, I give the Olaclip lenses, the 4-in-1, the macro, and the telephoto. I give them all very high nebulosity ratings. I'm having a blast with them. And if you're looking for something to spice up your iPhone photography, take a look at these. They make them for both the 4 series and the 5 series. So regardless, if you have a new iPhone at all, you'll be in good shape, and you can find one of these lenses that work very nicely for you. That's Olloclip, Olloclip, and I'll put links to them in the show notes. So speaking of iPhone photography, guess what our new photo assignment is for February? Smartphone. Yeah. Isn't that nice? Don't you like the way things just sort of fit together here? Smartphone. So now that means, of course, that I just published a gallery, as I mentioned earlier, and that's the high ISO gallery. And if you haven't seen that yet, make sure you take a look at it because it's dynamite. But the photo assignment for this month is smartphone. You have till the end of this month to turn in your photo. And if you have any questions about that, just go to the member info page. And it spells it all out. But basically, you attach a photo and you put February 2014 photo assignment in the subject header. Try not to strip out the metadata. I know someone, I think Kevin asked me on the Facebook page today about that. Because, you know, a lot of the images come to me with the metadata stripped out. You know, such as the camera information, the camera make, the camera model, the ISO setting, you know, all that sort of stuff. And he asked, well, how do we make sure that that doesn't happen? Well, you know, it really depends on what software you're using to manipulate your photos. But in Aperture and in Lightroom, both, that when you export an image out of those applications, when you're setting up that export, you have the option to export it with or without the metadata. And that's both types of metadata. You know, there's the EXIF metadata, EXIF, and that has the information written by your camera. You know, date, time, shutter speed, aperture, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then there's the IPTC data. And that is the stuff that you add, you know, your copyright information, your author name, your contact information, stuff like that. And my opinion is that you want all of that intact anyway, and especially for the photo assignment, because as you go through the different images and as you're looking at the gallery in the photo assignment, at least for me anyway, I want to see what camera that photographer used. I want to see what his or her settings were. You know, I want to see all that good stuff. So I want that metadata there. So if you're using a standard photo application, such as Aperture or Lightroom, just make sure, look at your export settings and just make sure that, you know, it's set so that the metadata is included in the exported file. And you can always check this, you know, before you send it off to me or anywhere else. You know, one thing that I do is after an export, if I want to check, I'm on a Mac, so I'll just double click on the file and open it in preview. And then in preview, I just do Command I, that gives me, you know, the info tab. And there I can see, you know, I can check the metadata for the image and, you know, if there's GPS data, all that sort of stuff, that will all show in that info tab. You know, and it has, you know, little tabs inside of there. You click on them and you can see, you know, the camera settings, and you should see your copyright and all that. If you open it up in preview, if you're on a Mac or the equivalent on a Windows machine, and you don't see any information, then the metadata isn't there. And you have to go back to your image and see how you exported it to make sure that it wasn't stripped out. So I think that's a pretty important thing. You know, I encourage it on the photo assignment, not only because I think it's interesting, but also it's just something that you want to do anyway. And, you know, the whole idea about the photo assignment is, you know, to get better, right? And to practice your skills and to have a deadline and to work, you know, with an assignment, you know, all that kind of stuff. Well, part of that assignment, in my view, is also to have, you know, your information travel with that image. And if it's not showing up in the photo assignment, then you know you have a problem and you need to figure out where that is and fix it so that not only will it show up in the gallery that we do here on the Digital Story, but it'll show up other places too. So anyway, okay, so the photo assignment for this month is smartphone. Now, you can do what you want with it. You know, obviously, the original idea is to take photos with your smartphone, but the smartphone itself can also be, you know, the subject. And then, of course, there's things I'm not even thinking of, variations on that theme. So anyway, you have a lot of latitude. It should be a fun one. If you get a new Olaclip, then it'll be really fun because you'll have a new lens to play with. Oh, by the way, I want to mention on the Olaclip thing, I highly recommend getting their free app also. And they have a free app that you can use not only to take pictures, which is really handy when you're using the lenses, but they also have a distortion correction tool built into the app. So that you can, before you save the photo to your camera roll, you can correct, if you want, the distortion in the shot caused by the lens. Pretty cool, and it's a free app. Okay, boy, that was a whole lot of stuff. It kind of mixed together there, wasn't it? So, speaking of photo assignments and such, we should mention SizzlePix, SizzlePix.com. Sponsors of the photo assignment and beyond. That's right. They just kind of sponsor the whole endeavor that we have going here. And if you haven't heard, which would surprise the heck out of me, SizzlePix is high definition output for your photography. It is this beautiful aluminum polished surface where your image is infused into it. And believe me, it will look different as a SizzlePix than it looks in any other type of output. SizzlePix.com. They pick one winner each month. That means we've got a new one coming up for this photo assignment that was just posted. And that person will be the SizzlePix pick of the month, and they will receive a free SizzlePix. That is cool stuff. SizzlePix.com, high definition output for your photography. And also the good folks at Red River Paper. You know, it's funny. I posted a shot on Facebook the other day of my iMac, you know, playing some music videos while I was working, having this sort of nostalgic moment. I still have, you know, one of the old iMacs, you know, that, you know, were the translucent material. And it was shot here in the recording room, actually, where I record myself. In fact, you can see part of the recording setup. Well, someone with a sharp eye commented, either on Instagram or Facebook, I forget, they go, wow, you got a lot of Red River paper there, because that was a stack of boxes was there in the shot. And that's right, because I like having the different surfaces. I like having the different types of paper so that I can make a print that, you know, is on a surface that matches the feeling of the image. And Red River paper is fantastic for that. They're the longest running sponsors of the Digital Story. And, you know, you can get such a wonderful deal from them because, you know, they make the paper and they sell the paper and they really pass the savings along to you. And they do have a wonderful Facebook page of their own at facebook.com/Red River Paper. All right, well, that's going to do it for this week. We sort of bounced all over the place, but hopefully we landed on spots that were of interest to you. And I've got a handful of great topics for next week, so make sure you come back. Until then, take some shots, jack up that ISO, play with your iPhone, check out Nigel French, have a great week, and meet me back here next time for the next edition of The Digital Story. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.